This is Jolie Holland. Welcome to the Ghost Story Salon. We're going to talk to Zoe Bookbender of the Prison Music Project today, and Zoe's going to tell us a little ghost story. Zoe's been helping us produce this online musical benefit called Abolition 2021. It's coming up April 9th, 16th, 23rd, and 30th. You can get your tickets at noonchorus.com/abolition.
Now that we're recording, can I gush a little bit about how much I listened to your music over the years?
That's very sweet of you. I'm happy that my work resonated with you. That's an honor.
Yeah, I especially listened to it a lot when I was living in Oakland. I know that you have roots there, so.
And what brought you to New Orleans?
It just felt like time to leave the Bay. I wasn't even really planning to move to New Orleans. I just came to stay for 2 months, and that was 9 years ago.
Did you found the Prison Music Project? How did that happen?
So I was playing a concert in Nevada City, where I grew up, and this woman who was a radio DJ on the local radio station, KVMR, was at my show and told me about this arts program at New Folsom Prison, which is nearby. She was doing these interviews with incarcerated folks. And so she told me about that and asked me if I wanted to play in the prison. And I just thought that that sounded like a cool opportunity. And like, I would, you know, definitely learn something. And so I said, yeah. She put me in touch with the guy who ran the arts program. I thought I was just going to go in this one day and play a couple concerts. And then as soon as I had that experience of being in the prison, I knew that I wanted to keep going back. Have you been inside a prison?
No.
It's like, really, I mean, I think it's confusing because there's all these people that either have spent time in prison or people that work in prison who are not prison abolitionists. But maybe I am a hyper empath or something. But, you know, I step foot in there and I'm like, oh, yeah, this place should not exist. No
right.
one deserves this. This mm-hmm. is not keeping us safe. This is a terrible idea. People
yeah.
just come out of here super traumatized. Just what a terrible solution we have found to... Yeah, just responding to violence with even more extreme and prolonged violence. It's a bad idea. So
it's a bad idea.
It's a bad idea. So it's just, you know, I thought if I can bring any amount of light or empathy, you know, through music, just through conversations, it just felt like if I can, you know, make someone's day a little bit better in there, I should do that every chance that I get. So yeah, I started volunteering on the regular in there, playing concerts and teaching music workshops. And it just organically happened that I started making music with the folks that I was working with. So it doesn't so much feel like I founded it. It feels like the group just sort of came together and the collaborations happened, and all together we are the Prison Music Project. And really, I feel like now anyone who performed on the record or any, you know, there's so many people now who've come in to design a poster or design the album art, or, you know, everyone who has touched it feels to me like they're part of the collective of the Prison Music Project.
Well, I love your egalitarian spirit about it. That's really cool. The song is really moving. What's the man's name?
Long Time Gone, and the man's name is Ken Blackburn. He's such an incredible songwriter. Ooh. I have a songbook you know, printed out on computer paper, but it's like in a folder and it's just like song after song after song. And you could make every single one of them is good enough to put on an album.
That's so cool.
And they all sound so classic. They sound so like, you know, like you've heard them 100 times and they've existed for eternity. I don't know. There's something he had has this way. He told me he wasn't writing anymore because he's pretty old and his hands were getting really shaky. And at the end of my knowing him, he wasn't playing guitar much anymore because he was frustrated with his ability with his shaky hands. I was wondering how you came to prison abolition.
I mean, I've always been in these radical circles and I love these like estuaries where people come up with these ideas and then decades down the line, we might be able to start making these dreams a reality. And I mean, I really didn't know what it meant. I didn't know what prison abolition meant for a while, even though I saw people talking about it and I was curious. And I just heard what Professor Angela Davis said, like, if we were going to jail, everyone who committed a so-called crime, everybody would be in jail. You know, like, it doesn't make any sense. And then you see these alternate visions in different countries, like in Norway. I think it's Norway. Anyway, one of those Northern European countries where the maximum prison sentence for even doing something like, you know, killing a large number of people at one time is 20 years. That's unthinkable for Americans. You know, the U.S. is just, we get so isolated because we're this like big lumbering beast and we forget, you know, I have dental insurance. We were just talking before the podcast started recording about I just had to go to Mexico to get my tooth fixed yesterday. I have dental insurance in the United States, but it's such a pain in the ass to use that I would rather drive to Mexico.
Wow.
I would rather. And also, I mean, another part of the picture is like, once you're already used to somebody sticking their fingers in your mouth and like getting power tools in your mouth, like, do you really want to meet somebody else who's going to do that? I love my guy. He's so sweet. So, you know, we just drive over the border and you're allowed to get 1 liter of amazing mezcal per person. Oh, nice. So, yeah, so that's what we do. We drive over the border and like get some really cool mezcal that you can't get up here. I had like one teeny, teeny, tiny new cavity that it literally took him like less than 30 seconds with the power tools to like clean that up. And then I had another teeny, tiny filling fall out and he patched that up and it cost $65. And the reason why I'm telling this stupid story is to bring home the point that Americans really forget. We're so tied up and isolated that we forget that the way that we do things is really stupid and it doesn't have to be that way. And you know, like us musicians, we're so lucky because we get out. You know, a lot of us go on tour to Europe and you see like how happy people are in Europe. And you see how incalcitrant their unions are. You see how hard those people fight. You see how extravagantly the unions show their asses at any moment, throw down and be like, no, motherfuckers, this is the line. This is the line right here. And we do not consent to 2 millimeters past that line. So we're in America, we forget how much power we have.
Yeah. When you get sick on tour and you have to go to the doctor in France, the doctor is apologizing about the 25 euro bill that you have to pay. They're like, oh, I'm so sorry. It's just, you're not European at all. Okay. Well, I'm so sorry. This is so expensive.
It's and music I'm like, to my ears.
I will tip you. Like, this is so cheap to me.
I know.
You know, you go to urgent care, the very minimum you're going to pay is 150. And then if they actually do anything, it's more. Oh, man. Yeah, just, and then it's like on top of being sick or injured, then you're also financially devastated. And that's just what it's like to live in the States. And yeah, you're right. There is this isolation, which is to me very similar to abusive relationships, which,
yes,
you know, people who are being abused get isolated so that they're separate from their communities who might help them point out what is not okay about their situation. And that's what it's like in the States. I think there's so many people here who don't experience other places, or if they do, it's so much on a tourist level that they don't get a chance to figure out how things really function there to see how much better it is. I mean, I love this country. I'm not American, I'm Canadian, but I grew up in the States and it feels like home to me, and I love it for so many reasons. But yeah, there's so much healthcare system, the prison system, policing, so many things that are so out of hand here.
And in some ways, we almost have something like European style prison, so-called justice for white people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a good friend of mine was a 17-year-old street kid, and there was this abusive dude in their scene who kept assaulting women in their scene, or girls. And him and his friend were, you know, incredibly disenfranchised people who had no, you know, connection to the larger society in a lot of ways. And they didn't feel like there was any justice in their community. So they took matters into their own hands. And these two 17-year-old boys killed this guy. And my friend went to jail for 17. He went to jail for 15 years. He did his time. White guy, got out, got a really good job, and nobody cared that he was a murderer. I don't think that would be true for me. You know, if I was a woman who had murdered somebody, I don't think I would get 15 years. I don't think I would get that kind of lenient sentence. And I don't think I would be forgiven. I don't think I could go on and get a good job after that. He had this, like, you know, $100,000 job in tech, and he hadn't even gone to college.
Wow. Oh, white men.
Yeah. And then, you know, we look at Louisiana, like a lot of my family is from Louisiana. My grandmother grew up in the Marigny, and there's controversy in the family. Some people say she was that she was passing for white. Like, we don't know, like, if she had black family. I mean, apparently, as far as I can research it, she did. She had this, like, hilarious little phrase she told me one time. She said, "I'm half black, I'm half French, and I'm half Indian. That makes me Cajun," you know, which is a very Louisiana kind of silly thing to say. But so she, I researched a little bit, and this one family last name of hers is, as far as I can tell, that spelling doesn't exist anywhere except in people in the Choctaw Nation. So I can see from the limited amount of research that I was able to do, but we look white, you know, we're seen as white. But I can't imagine sorry, I'm trying to get to this. Like, you know, I have friends in Louisiana. I have friends whose, you know, skin is darker, who were caught with a joint, and that ruined their entire lives.
Mm-hmm.
Some tiny little thing. They didn't take justice into their own hands. They were just trying to get by.
I recently interviewed a woman named Stacey Lannert, who, when she was 18, she killed her father, who'd been raping her since she was, I think, 12. And he started doing the same thing to her little sister, which is when she killed him. And as she tells it, it wasn't her plan. She shot at him out of, you know, panic and PTSD and just years of abuse, and he died. And she has all this empathy for him, which is really wild to talk to her. But anyway, I forget what her original sentence was. It might have been life without. I mean, it was, they wouldn't apply the battered woman sin, whatever that is. It makes the sentence less severe if you're killing someone who has hurt you, if you're defending yourself, even though obviously she had been abused for years. The prosecutor just kept saying, like, how do we know? Just because he was a drunk doesn't mean he was a rapist. She's making it up.
Why does anybody believe he was a drunk either? Like, what kind of sense does that make? It's so awful.
Yeah. And she finally, after like 18 years, got some Missouri governor granted her clemency out of the blue. But otherwise, she'd still be in prison now. And now she is a lawyer. And until recently, she was working as a public defender. Now she works for the Bail Project. Such a badass.
So wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So good of her. She saved her sister so much. I mean, her sister went through a lot of trauma just being around all that and having her sister go to jail. But like, she could have saved her sister's life right there. And now she's doing so much good in the community.
What's wild is they actually also charged her sister, I think, for conspiracy. And her sister took a deal and served a few years.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, that's our justice system. Justice. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking so much about how any degree of dehumanization leads to so much brutality. Like, I drove to Wyoming to see one of my best friends in September, which felt so crazy during the pandemic, but Wyoming had so few cases. And we listened to this long investigative journalist style podcast about the rehab system as basically free labor for corporations.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, you go in front of a judge because of something that was related to, you know, some crime that you might have committed under the influence, and then they give you this like choice or whatever, you know, you're pressured into doing rehab, end quote. And there's no therapy. It's just basically prison labor under a different name. And people like broke limbs on the job, people died on the job and got no health care. It's so brutal. And that just stems from the kind of dehumanization that we lend to, that our culture lends to addicts.
Mm-hmm.
And then the, you know, the dehumanization around trans identities, non-binary identities is so dangerous. It creates so much violence, or like it lends itself to so much violence. And I don't know how we're going to move around this stuff.
On the topic of prison labor, one of the writers for the Prison Music Project, Samuel Nathaniel Brown, his job in the prison, getting paid, you know, a few cents to do this, he was working in the hospital. And so when COVID hit, that didn't feel like a safe job, but he was threatened with a write-up if he didn't go to work. And a write-up can extend your time. If you get enough write-ups, you go to solitary confinement. I mean, it's forced labor. It's slavery. And mm-hmm. it's also, it can be life-threatening labor. And Sam got COVID. Every one of our writers in prison has gotten COVID at least once. So Sam authored this bill called the California Abolition Act about abolishing involuntary labor in prison. It was announced by Assemblywoman Com Lager in California. It's ACA 3. It's so exciting. I'm so proud of him.
So this is the Ghost Story Salon. Do you want to tell a ghost story? You don't have to.
Yeah, what was the ghost story I was going to tell? Maybe I'll just tell the most recent one.
Ooh, all right.
It's not that ghosty, but it's like, it's about dead people. So I've been staying out in the country for a few months, had to get out of the city and rented a little cabin on this property. And when I moved here, there was a woman staying on this land already in another cabin who is a psychic. She's a medium. And she told me that she saw one of my past lives. And in my past life, I was in a Holocaust concentration camp, and I was in my late teens when I was in this concentration camp. And she basically, what she described was my grandfather's life. And so I said, are you sure that that is my past life, or is it maybe my grandfather? And she goes, oh, that makes more sense. So I'm someone who doesn't really concretely believe in anything, but I'm open to the possibility of past lives and spirits sticking around and or not. I have no idea. And I don't claim to know, but that felt pretty specific for her to talk about, the exact age that he was when he was in camp. And he passed a couple of years ago, so she thinks maybe he's hanging around me as a protector.
I can imagine it. I've had some experiences with medium type people, and I never know what to think. So it was just out of the blue. She was just like, oh, hey. Like, instead of like, oh, hey, your fly's down, it's like, oh, hey, I see your past life.
Yep, totally. She was sitting at the picnic table, and I just went out there maybe I was going in my car to get something, or maybe I just was going out there to say hi. I can't remember. But we were just chatting, and she said, so I saw your past life. This is what I saw. Like, wow. Okay.
Was that all in that interaction, or did y'all keep talking about it?
That was it. Just that in that interaction. Mm-hmm. And she hadn't seen much else about him. I don't think that's really all that she saw. And, you know, part of me wonders, maybe I was in camp with him, which is why I was reincarnated as his granddaughter, because they say that we stay connected through our different lives. So maybe she's right that it was my past life and it wasn't actually my grandfather that she was seeing. And that's just, you know, interesting to hold as a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Because we don't know about any of this stuff. I mean, it's like a dream. It's like however you want to analyze it, like however you want to put a handle on that kind of information, because it just depends on how it resonates with you in each particular moment. I like your translation that you were buddies with him.
That actually just occurred to me right now as I was telling you.
Oh, it's good.
I hadn't thought that before, but I just thought, oh, you're confusing me with my grandfather, obviously. But it's just now that I was like, oh, maybe that was. Maybe I was reincarnated to remain in his life. That, I mean, yeah, his brother died in camp. He's a little younger, though. So, but, you know, that's a thought. Maybe she was seeing, maybe I am a reincarnation of my great uncle. We had another interaction with the first night I arrived here in St. Francisville. This woman, Angie, she's the medium. She came in and chatted with me on my porch the first night I arrived. And I was actually kind of freaked out because it's COVID. And I was like, hey, you got to check in. But she kind of invited herself onto my porch. And at one point I was walking by her and she slapped my butt on my way inside, like as I walked by her. And I was like, what a weird thing to do to a person you've just met. But she is psychic. And my grandmother did tell me before she died last year. And it was like right around the anniversary of my grandmother's death. And she told me before she died, she said, if I can come back, I'm going to come visit you and you'll know because I'll slap you on the butt. Because that's what she always used to do. Every time we walked past her, she would just smack us on the butt in a loving way.
Did you feel like Angie was channeling your grandmother?
That's what I thought maybe at the time. And so later in our conversation, I asked her if that's something she normally does. And she said, no, actually, I never do that.
There's this really sweet story from a friend of mine's family. I won't name them since I haven't checked in with them about sharing this, but I'm friends with two of the first cousins, and their grandmother died, and there was a family friend there after she had died, and people were kind of mourning her and like, you know, talking about her life. And this family friend got up and said, I don't know why you all are mourning her. I see her with us right now. And she did a very weird little dance that their grandmother had done. And everyone said there was no way that she could have known that.
Wow.
And it was funny because one of my friends that told the story said that he was really embarrassed because some really rich members of the family were there. And he was like, don't act like that around the rich people. Which I don't really understand. That's funny. Like, coddle the rich people. Don't make anything weird for them. It's very striking. And it's a, you know, if we're going to take her word for it and like, you know, like follow the logic, literally, it was like, she just saw her there dancing just like that. And just wanted everybody to know, just to communicate in this like very personal way. I want y'all to know.
That's how
do you feel like she was joking?
No, she's a funny, like, she was a little like I am, I guess. She didn't really firmly believe in any kind of spirituality, but she was, yeah, again, like open to any of it. Sometimes she would do, I think that she learned, because she lived in Mexico for a while. So I think that she was influenced by Santeria a little bit. She would, yeah, she like pulled from Catholicism, but also like she had a collection of crystals that she felt protected her. And one time while I was on tour, she gave me a crystal and she said, I don't know if it works, but just keep it with you. Just please keep it with you, just in case it helps.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I think she was, when she was nearing death, she thought, I don't know if I'm going to be able to come back. I don't know if there's something after, but if there is, and I can visit you, this is how you'll know. You know, just in case. That was her whole, just, you know, how she was the whole time I knew her. So
that's adorable.
And I kept waiting for, you know, like a ghost slap in the butt. I thought I would feel it when no one was behind me. It hadn't occurred to me that it would possibly happen through a body that was physically there that was not her. She better
nobody
not...
wants to think that.
she better not send it through any men ever, because they will get beat up.
Right. Word. Thank you for sharing those. Those are very sweet stories.
Thanks so much to Zoe Bookbinder for joining us today. You should go check out their Patreon. I want to thank our producer, Rob Van Vranken. And thanks so much to Abolition Apostles for coming up with the idea of this hospitality house. Please support our benefit. You can get your tickets at noonchorus.com/abolition. And thank you for joining us on the Ghost Story Salon. So